Welcome to the Wampa's Lair podcast. Deep in the bowels of the frozen ice caverns of Hoth, our hosts, Carl LeClaire and Jason Hunt, have been frozen upside down to the cave ceiling with nothing to do but talk all things Star Wars. So make yourselves comfortable, but keep a wary eye out for trouble here in the Wampa's Lair.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to another exciting episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. This is episode number 48, Across the Stars. I am, as always, one of your hosts, Jason Hunt, and with me we have the Boba Fett to my Cad Bane. We have Carl LeClaire.
Hey Jason, we did that matchup a while back. I believe I won. What's up?
Well, I disagreed with that matchup.
Yes,
so
you did. You did.
I did, very profusely.
But big doings, big happenings in the Wampa's Lair tonight, because we have finally broken the mold of being a male-dominated podcast by bringing in a what you would call woman. Yes. So yes, she's got many, many faces. She's very involved in the Star Wars community. She is a part of the new podcast over at Star Wars Report, Star Wars Bookworms. She also runs her own blog site, Fangirl Next Door. She also writes for Jedi News. It's the one, it's the only, it's Teresa Delgado.
Hey, guys. I'm so glad that I get to be here.
Yeah, well, we're so glad to have you, finally. I remember meeting you a year and a half ago. I think we met briefly at Fan Days.
We all sat together during Hughes the Force.
Yes, we did.
Yes, that was what it was.
We all shed a laugh or two. So
yes.
And we also got to meet Teresa's wonderful husband, who is going to hopefully weigh in on her romantic ideals tonight. So
yes. But before we get into our topic, we do have a matchup that we had going from our last show. And for those of you that a quick reminder, that was Starkiller, the Secret Apprentice, versus Anakin Skywalker. And we got a lot of responses from you guys, so without any further ado, here we go. Facebook, we got a response from Christoph Keitzman. It's hard to say, considering that Starkiller is overpowered due to game mechanics, similar to Kyle Katarn and Jaden Kor before him. I'd say Anakin Skywalker. Starkiller was just a hand, and not even Palpatine's, but Vader's. His status was thus similar to that of Lumia, who wasn't that strong. Kyle Avery says, Anakin, he's pretty much a match for Starkiller in brute strength, and he has more cunning, intellect, and intuition to go along with it. Bill Thompson, sad as it is, Starkiller in a rout. Whether in the game, the comics, or the books, he was made into easily the most powerful Force user Star Wars has ever seen. As much as I don't like how overpowered Starkiller is, there's no denying how powerful he is within the universe. That is why he wipes the floor with anyone in a one-on-one matchup. Brian V. Klein, Anakin. As much as I like the Starkiller character, I think Anakin has much more natural ability and skill. It would be a close fight, but I think Anakin would emerge victorious, seeing as how, in essence, he's the one who trained Starkiller. And then maybe later on he'd get a rematch against one of the Starkiller clones. Jess Def Jam, Anakin will win. Anakin can confuse Starkiller about the whole part of being a clone and then whammo off his arms. James Southard, Starkiller's pretty easy because he is overpowered. I mean, geez, I don't think anyone can beat him. If he can bring down a Star Destroyer and actually does beat the Emperor in the game, Skywalker can't do either. Michael Stewart, Skywalker, he's the chosen one for a reason. Patrick Kotef, I vote for Anakin. Jazz from Norway says, no doubt in my mind on this one, Anakin all the way. His skills are surpassed by only one person, and that was his son. And basically, I think Starkiller's skills were embellished in order to look cool in the games. Rene Tajima Bier, I have heard that Starkiller should be strong, so one for Starkiller. And then finally we got our email from our buddy Ben Kritzman. The verdict. After acquainting myself with Galen Merrick Starkiller and doing a brief once-over of Anakin, I can easily say that this duel would be one that could reshape the Star Wars galaxy as we know it. These two beings once held the potential to become the most powerful force wielders of their times, only after their suffering grievous and debilitating injuries, or dying outright only to be cloned later, were each combatant's force powers diminished. I'm not too sure about this in regards to Merrick Starkiller. His clone could be just as powerful as the original. Couldn't find anything for or against that. Not only would this duel shape the galaxy, it would also be quite the emotional affair with Vader taking and re-raising Merrick as his, quote, son. Both participants are very accomplished swordsmen, having fought and defeated a number of well-known lightsaber wielders, as well as displaying incredible prowess and adaptability. Each man has also shown amazing command of the Force, Starkiller forcing a full-sized Star Destroyer to the ground, Anakin forcing the son and daughter, the physical representations of the light and dark side respectively, or dark and light side respectively, back to their human forms. Even though I've said it already, it goes without saying that this duel would be won for the ages, and after thinking it over many times, I ultimately have to cast my vote with Anakin Skywalker. And with that, that ends our fan responses. We have a 8-3 matchup so far. And before we wind up our votes, Carl, Teresa, why don't you guys weigh in while I get a drink of water?
Carl, go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. I'm going to have to go with the general consensus of our Larians and also go with Anakin. And first off, I like how whenever Jason reads for Jazz, he always says, Jazz, our buddy from Norway. I love how he just throws in the country. It's so adorable.
Well, I can't pronounce his last name, so.
That's okay. That's quite all right. But, I think the reason I would say Anakin, and I think it would be Anakin quite easily. Again, one of the responses, you know, mentioned the fact that with any video game, you're obviously going to have, like, these advanced powers and stuff to use because it makes the game more exciting. But let's remember, you know, that Starkiller is still very much subservient to Darth Vader. And I think Anakin, at the height of, you know, his career at the end of the Clone Wars into Revenge of the Sith, is so much more powerful than Starkiller could have ever hoped to become. Because, again, he's the Chosen One, so he already has a natural ability with the Force. He's much more gifted of a fighter, in my opinion, because he's been honed by, you know, 3 years of the Clone Wars. Starkiller never fought in a war. So I think he has the natural strength of the Force behind him that Starkiller can't have, not to mention a way better sword technique. So, let's be honest, Darth Vader trained Starkiller. So, you got that going for you too. So, yeah, I'm gonna have to give this one to Anakin. So, what do you think, Teresa?
Well, for me, I think it depends on what Anakin we're talking about. If we're talking about Clone Wars Anakin, then hands down Anakin. But if we're talking about where Anakin is in Revenge of the Sith, I'd have to give it to Starkiller, honestly, because Anakin is so clouded by everything that's going on once he gets to the point in Revenge of the Sith that I just don't feel like he would have the ability to focus the way that Starkiller does. And while you're right that Vader trains Starkiller, at the same time, you know, he's getting trained in a much different way than how Anakin was trained. So, I don't know. It just depends for me. But if we're talking Clone Wars Anakin, then definitely Anakin. So, but that's where I'm going to leave it, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. I mean, I think Starkiller would definitely beat Episode 1 Anakin, no doubt about it.
I don't think that's an even fair comparison.
Is that a lightsaber wizard?
Well, and here's the other thing for me, too. Everybody says that Anakin is the Chosen One. I don't know if I have ever bought into that, because we're told he's the Chosen One because that's what Qui-Gon thinks. So everybody kind of goes there with it. But was he really the Chosen One or not?
Well, why don't you just start us on a new topic, Teresa?
I know, let's just talk. I'm kidding.
Oh, that's a very interesting thing to think about.
It is.
Is Anakin the Chosen One or is Luke the Chosen One? You know, is Luke the one that brought about the... Or is Anakin the one that brought about Luke the Chosen One? That's interesting to think about.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and I have to address that.
We're going to have to talk about this another time, but this is something else I've thought of, is everybody talks about the Chosen One was supposed to bring balance to the Force, and then everybody is upset because Anakin turns to the dark side. Well, where was the balance before? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Very true. Very true. Oh,
absolutely.
And here we are starting new topics before we've actually gotten to the show topic. But real quick, let me weigh in on this matchup. I like your idea of Anakin and Revenge of the Sith not winning in this, because that actually makes a lot of sense, Teresa, that you know he's too clouded and too emotionally compromised to really overcome Starkiller at that point. But I'm going to make my judgment based on the Clone Wars, particularly this latest episode, the Season 5 finale, series finale of the Clone Wars. I'm going to cry about that. That's ending. But in that episode, when we see Anakin, you know, fighting Barriss, at the end of it, he's just like, okay, let's end this battle. I've done fighting you. And he just basically grabs her with the Force midair, shoves her against the tree, and looks like he's about ready to, you know, break her in half with the Force without, you know, batting an eye.
Still haven't seen it, Jason. Okay, spoiler alert, please.
Sorry. I'm very sorry. You should have seen it by now. It's
good. I know.
Have you really not seen it?
I haven't. I haven't watched the last two episodes yet.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I know. I've been busy. And Jason keeps saying, they're 22 minutes.
Yeah.
I don't think saying that you've been busy is an excuse.
No, it's not.
Well, it's my subconscious way of deciding that it's not over until I say it's over.
Sorry.
No, I'm kidding, Jason. That's totally all right. I know. I know that Anakin dies at the end, so it's okay.
Yes. Yeah. It's Petro, the Padawan. He comes back and does it. No. but just based on that last episode of the Clone Wars, I'm going to have to say that Anakin would come out on top over Starkiller, just because of the control over the Force that he has at that point, and just the passion that he has, and the drive that he has. But once Ahsoka leaves, things get, you know, really stirred up in turmoil for him. So we'll see where that would go for him. But at that point, where we have Anakin, you know, just prior to Revenge of the Sith, I would say Anakin would come out victorious. However, it has to be Anakin after the Clone Wars have started, because Episode 2 Anakin couldn't have beat Starkiller either.
No.
I think it's close. Anakin probably loses a leg, but
he's used to that.
He would win. Yeah, he's used to that. No, but he would win. It would not be a bloodless win, but Anakin would win. So. And with that, folks, we have a pretty significant victory here. 11-3, Anakin over Starkiller. We have another exciting, interesting matchup for you at the end of the show, but you're going to have to stay and listen to that after the topic. So, and Carl,
uh-huh.
What is our topic today?
Oh, love. It's all about love. no, we're going to be talking about the role of romance in Star Wars. So, predominantly, as we see it in the films, maybe the Clone Wars as well. Obviously, there's a lot of romances throughout the EU, but we like to leave all the EU stuff to the masters of that over at Beyond the Films. So, I mean, by all means, if you guys want to talk EU, by all means, feel free. But I'll stick most of my stuff just to the films. But we're going to be looking at into, you know, how does romance, in a sense, play a role in some of the characters' lives and essentially in deciding to some degree the fate of the Star Wars galaxy. So, Teresa is an expert on romance. so, yeah, we figured we'd have her on because she's done the one thing Jason and I haven't done, and that's get married.
Yes.
So she knows more than us. That's what we've decided. So, yeah, we were going to have Matt Cranky on, but, you know, we figured he probably doesn't really know what he's talking about, so.
Oh, dear.
So, yeah.
Oh. Jokes.
Jokes. Yes, LOL. So I'm just going to start talking, and you guys can just join in.
Okay.
So, I think the big thing with, you know, looking at romance, is it has a very unique role, especially in the prequels. And obviously we see a romance brew between, you know, Anakin and Padme. And Teresa brought up a great point when Jason presented the idea to her. And, you know, to bring up this idea of how does it, you know, attachment play into this romantic idea? Because it's very clear in episode 2, Anakin's not supposed to fall in love romantically with anybody. And it's really funny because, you know, you have that scene when they're on the, you know, the transport ship there in Attack of the Clones. And, you know, Padme says, you know, are you allowed to love? I thought that was forbidden for a Jedi. And he essentially goes into this, you know, little rant about how Jedi are supposed to be compassionate and therefore should love. But I think Anakin's confusing that idea of love. I mean, I think if we want to apply like some – sorry, everybody. Here's the teacher in me. But the Greek give us, you know, three different words for love. We have philia love, which is friendship love, agape love, which is totally selfless love, and then we have eros love, which is passionate love. I think the love that Jedi are supposed to have is that agape, that selfless love, that compassionate love. It's not in any way romantic, though. It's not erotic love. So I think Anakin is right in saying Jedi are encouraged to love, but it's meant to be this detached, compassionate love. But Anakin is trying to convince himself that it's okay for him to romantically fall in love. But I think, you know, there's a huge I think it's a huge mistake the Jedi Order has by prohibiting romantic love. And obviously, again, just to even tap into the EU, obviously when Luke Skywalker reorders the Jedi Order in the EU, he opens that door. He opens the permittance to allow for marriage in the Jedi Order, for, you know, essentially them to love in a romantic manner. This is my opinion, of course, and I'd be interested to see what you guys think. But in my opinion, I think the Jedi are doing a disservice by prohibiting that form of love. And obviously that's going to lead to a huge problem with Anakin. So obviously this is also part of my Catholic bitterness, the fact that Catholic priests can't get married. So there's some of that in there too. So yeah, I mean, I don't know. That's just, to me, it's 'cause romantic love is something that it's really powerful, as we see as the way it shapes Anakin. And the fact that he's totally forbidden from acting on that is obviously going to be a huge problem for him, and obviously the fate of the galaxy, in a sense. So, I don't know. What do you guys think about all that? I just talked for a while. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. Jump in if you want to, Teresa. But I think you're pretty right there. I mean, the Jedi, I'm sure, initially started the idea of, you know, no attachments, you know, type of an approach to romantic relationships as an effort to ensure that they were not compromised in, you know, difficult situations, that no one could threaten them with, you know, this other person or something like that, and make them compromise with their job and what they were supposed to do. But throughout the years, that got really that caused the Jedi, and we see this by the time of the prequels, that caused the Jedi to get really detached from the galaxy, the Republic, the common people at large, not simply in that sort of, you know, relational way, but just sort of in general. They're very aloof. They're very separated. And I think, you know, that's something that Palpatine was really able to capitalize on. And, you know, the Jedi are so mysterious, and they're always hiding away in their temple, and they only come out when there's trouble around, and, you know, they swing their lightsabers, they wave their hands, and, you know, they take care of business, you know, and that's what they do, and that there's no personal interaction outside of that. And that's probably stemmed from that no attachments rule. But Anakin is someone that, you know, obviously by the time, you know, he's found by the Jedi, he's already developed attachments and love. You know, he's loved his mother for, you know, his entire life. And he's very heartbroken when he has to leave her, because, you know, he has that attachment. He has that love, which causes him in episode 2, obviously, to go back and, you know, try and rescue her. When she dies in his arms, he has to find another outlet for that love. And so a crush, you know, a big old crush that he has on Padme, becomes an I'm in love with you, let's, you know, take this farther sort of thing. Which, of course, he was already trying to head that way anyway, you know, trying to put the smooth moves, which kind of awkward to do when you have no practice because you're in the Jedi temple the whole time. But no, it's, he's, you know, he's very different and breaking the mold in so many ways simply because he has outside experience before the Jedi Order. And that exposes a flaw relationally that the Jedi have. It's kind of funny how we're, you know, addressing this, you know, coming at this topic initially from the Jedi's point of view. But I'm sure we'll work in some of the other things. But it just, it's something that I find to be a fatal, you know, a fatal flaw ultimately for the Jedi, because they allow themselves to get so, so unattached that they can't see that they're in trouble with the galaxy at large until it's too late. So, you know, Palpatine uses that to his advantage, you know, with his manipulation and subterfuge and everything, and is able to weave a web around them because they're so attached and so inward looking that they don't see it happening until it's too late. So, anybody else want to take that?
Yeah, so I see what you guys are saying, and I actually do agree with that a lot, just simply because you cannot take something that is an innate part of being a human and try to control those things and control other people. And that's what the Jedi Order essentially does. You know, and it's not saying that it's wrong, but it's the same thing as like what happens in certain kind of religions, you know, Catholicism is one of them, you know, of trying to control the people that are in them, not allowing them to do certain things. So like you guys were saying about Catholic priests that can't get married, you know, it's that whole aspect of control. And while we understand why the Jedi do that, because, you know, they have this religion of the Force and, you know, of how they want to go about things, you can't just simply make everything go away through meditation and belief in the Force. People are going to have the feelings that they have about other people, but when they know that it's forbidden, they know that it's something that they can't have, it almost makes it to where they want it more, or want to be able to do it. It's that whole thing of, you know, if you tell a kid, you know, not to do something, they're going to go and do it just to see what happens. And I'm not saying that's what Anakin does in his particular relationship with Padme. I think he really does believe that he loves her, but at the same time, he's never really learned what love truly is. He knows what it is to love his mother, but he hasn't been through relationships, you know? And when we're looking at Anakin in episode 2, he's, what, guys, help me out, he's like 19?
Yeah, 19, yeah. 20,
yeah.
Something
yeah,
like that.
19. You're talking about, you know, someone who usually people have at least their first loves or their first crushes when they're, you know, in their teens. And so we're talking about someone who's been kept away from the one person that he met that he could possibly have feelings for. And then it's this rush of feelings and he doesn't really know how to handle it. And so I think that's why we see what we see in the films. As opposed to, let's go to the original trilogy, you know, the love between Han and Leia, who we don't know what they've been through if we're just looking at the films. We don't know if they've had relationships before, but we can kind of discern that they probably have because of the way that they interact with each other. You know, it's not this all be all end all passion, because they understand and they're more mature. So I think a lot of people expect that love between Anakin and Padme to be something more mature, but how can it be when one of them is 19 years old and hasn't ever felt that before? I found a quote. It's from a book called A Novel of Obsession, but it says, "Love is an untamed force. When we try to control it, it destroys us. When we try to imprison it, it enslaves us. When we try to understand it, it leaves us feeling lost and confused." And I think that's Anakin in a nutshell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and when you look at the Jedi Order, you know, yes, they're doing a disservice. But if you go back, and I know you guys, you know, weren't going to talk about the EU, but right now there's a series of comic books coming out and a book coming out called Dawn of the Jedi. And it's talking about all of the beginnings of the Jedi and how they, you know, came to be. And from stuff that I've read, you know, in that era, because I really like that era, you have a lot of people that are members of the Jedi that have kids, you know, maybe not have gotten married, but they've had kids. They have people that they're in love with. They have all these different things. So it's kind of curious to me of sort of where it came from of the whole no attachments, you know, and we talk about no attachments, but is it no attachments to other people that are outside of the Jedi Order? Because all of the Jedi have attachments to each other. I mean, in the Clone Wars, Anakin says to Ahsoka to go be with her friend who's Barriss. That's an attachment that they've made through being, you know, peers in the Jedi Order. So, and we see it in the books. They all have friends. You know, those are all attachments. So to me, it seems like they're just saying you can't have attachments outside of the Jedi Order, but within the Jedi Order, it's okay. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. It's okay if it's a certain type of attachment. So,
right.
Right. Yeah. Right. Well, even just going back to this generality of romance, I mean, something I think it's very clear, though, is that the romance we see play out in the prequels between Anakin and Padme is a very dysfunctional romance, and it's also a very young romance. Anakin first sees her when he's, you know, 9, 10, 11 years old there in episode 1. Are you an angel? you know, he's obviously smitten by her, and, you know, he holds on to that for cheapers a decade, which is bit cray. When he sees her again, he's still young. I mean, he's a young man. And I mean, Therese, I know you work in a high school too. I mean, you and I both see lots of awkward teenage romance, and it's awkward. Anakin is, but he's also, he doesn't get romance. He doesn't get romantic love because, if you read anything from the episode 3 novel, which again is a phenomenal novel, you learn a lot about what's going on inside Anakin and how afraid he is of losing Padme. And obviously this is not good. That's not a good romance. I mean, in the words of Lady Gaga, that's a bad romance.
it's codependency.
What?
It's codependency.
Oh, sorry.
That's what
it is. Yeah.
He's codependent on Padme's existence for his own existence. If she doesn't exist, then therefore he doesn't exist. Thus, Darth Vader.
Right. Exactly. Right. And that's not romance. I mean, it's supposed to be about, giving yourself away to the other. And instead, Anakin's just so obsessed about holding on to her. That's not a good romance. And I mean, again, we can talk about why he does this. I mean, again, it's that, you know, he loses his mother and that really rattles him, and he doesn't want to lose anybody else that he cares about. And like Jason and I have talked about before, I mean, Anakin essentially replaces his mother with Padme. I mean, as the fundamental relationship in his life. And he, like you just said, Therese, I mean, he's dependent upon her, and without her, it's like he ceases to exist. And that's not really the role of romance. I mean, romance, in a sense, opens us up and makes us become more of who we are. It sees the potential in who we are and opens us up to be more. And I think that's the converse of what we see, you know, with Han and Leia. And like you just said, I mean, they're older. I mean, Han's in his 30s in episode 4. Leia's in, I mean, she's still in her early 20s, but, they've been through a lot more in life. And, you know, Han doesn't need her per se, but we're going to see the positive influence of their romance because it makes Han into so much of a better person. And that's really what romantic love is supposed to do. Anakin's romance essentially makes him into a worse person because he becomes so obsessed with her he chokes the, I mean, literally at the end of episode 3, I mean, he literally chokes the life out of her. And that's really what their romance has become.
You have to look at the flip side, though. I mean, because Padme essentially dies because of a broken heart. I mean, what the heck is that? Like, if she's not completely dependent on him as well, you know, then there's no reason for her to be so heartbroken that she wouldn't live to take care of their children. You know what I'm saying? I mean, yeah. I'm not a mom, but from a mom's perspective, you know, she could still have a piece of Anakin through their children, but instead she completely gives up. So if you ask me, I mean, it's codependent on both sides, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe her not as much, because we do see her, you know, continue to work in the Senate and continue trying to live by her ideals and those kind of things. But, I mean, it's the same. I mean, anybody who just dies of a broken heart just because, I'm like, come on. And I hate that aspect of Padme, because I love her so much more than I do Leia. And she's such a stronger character. And if you see her in the Clone Wars and how awesome she is, and then we get to Revenge of the Sith, and then she just gives up and dies. And I'm just like, that's not her. Like, that makes no sense to me.
Yeah.
It doesn't fit her personality at all.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and her character's so weak in Revenge of the Sith, too. In the sense of, I mean, Anakin, granted, like Jason, you've pointed out before, obviously, they you know, had to delete a lot of the scenes with her, you know, meeting with the other senators and whatnot about Palpatine. Mm-hmm. But even in light of that, even if they did still have them, I mean, she still is kind of like this weak person who watches Anakin crumble, and she watches Anakin make all these bad decisions, and she kind of just is okay with it, which is really weird. I mean, she's a very, like you said, Therese, I mean, especially in the Clone Wars, she's this very intelligent, hard fighting warrior woman, and then all of a sudden in Revenge of the Sith, she's just like, oh no, oh no, oh no, I'm going to cry. And it's such a weird characterization of her. I mean, even in episodes 1 and 2, she's this very strong, intelligent character, and then in episode 3, she's just so passive to what's going on. I think you're right. I mean, she's equally to blame in the fact that she needs Anakin almost as much as he needs her.
Yeah. The curious thing, though, is that there's almost no real explanation of how she gets there. And I'm just going to go off on a little tangent here, is that Padme, you know, even of what we've seen, you know, in the Clone Wars, you know, maybe a year and a half removed from Revenge of the Sith, she's still a very, very strong, independent character. And you're like, well, what happens to make her so dependent on Anakin and so invested in him as part of her? And, you know, maybe it's the fact that she finds out she's pregnant, maybe. I don't know, but we have no idea. We haven't seen any of that in any other sort of story or EU. And I think a lot of people, you know, in the EU and novels and comics and stuff focus so much on Anakin and his fall that they sort of forget that Padme's at fault too. And I like, you know, I like that you brought that up, Teresa, because it brings up very, very interesting points. And it's, you know, there has to be an explanation for why she does that, because it doesn't, you're right, it doesn't make sense, and it's very out of character. I sort of mentally retcon it into my head as like, well, he caused more damage to her when he force choked her than we were initially told. You know, that's sort of how I reconcile that in my mind. But it, you know, if I stop and really actually look at everything, it doesn't quite make sense. So there has to be a story there, and I hope we get that, because otherwise it's just going to be one of those kind of awkward moves that the prequels made that never really got resolved and never got addressed. So, sorry, a little tangent there, but I really hope we get to see something, some explanation as to why she goes from being a strong, you know, face of the loyal opposition sort of character to, you know, where she ends up in Revenge of the Sith, you know, running to Mustafar, you know, to find Anakin, you know, and deserting everything, you know, just to go, what's going on, and, you know, and try to make sure that, you know, that part of her life is still okay, you know, and not trusting it, you know. So it's very interesting. I hope we get that story somewhere. So,
well, the only thing I can think of is, if you think about Anakin and his character, he's really intense and almost in a weird way kind of abusive, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, could you, if you were to put yourself in that situation, at least me, like, I would be semi-afraid of him just on a normal basis because of his intensity, the way he talks, you know, his screaming nightmares and all that stuff. It would make me feel, start questioning the decisions that I made. And maybe that's where she is. You know, maybe she's questioning it, but she doesn't want to question it because she does love him. But maybe she's trying to figure out, you know, what is going on here? What have I done? What is going on with him? And there's so many unknowns for her, as well as the fact that now she's pregnant, you know, and there's the war that's coming, you know, everything that she can see. She's smart. She knows what's going on. She knows what's about to happen, you know, and so there's a lot that can be put on her. And one of the things that I think a lot of people forget about is that a woman is just a really complicated being. You know, they can take on a lot and they can handle a lot all at one time and a lot of emotions, but you reach your breaking point eventually, you know, and we see her breaking point, and her breaking point is seeing someone that she had a lot of belief in turn to a place that she would never go. You know, she would never go there. And even if she were to live, she would be living watching someone that she loved do horrible things to people. You know, she wouldn't have been able to deal with that. And I don't know if they have divorce in Star Wars. But, you know, I mean, maybe the best course of action was for her to finally let go, you know?
And
I don't know.
Yeah, and just a thought I had, you know, her other love, part of what also makes her strong, her other love is the Republic and the democracy that the Republic stood for. And she's watched that systematically be taken apart and dismantled, and then finally in Revenge of the Sith, you know, it's abolished and turned into an empire. And, you know, she sits there and says, so this is how liberty dies, with thunderous applause. And, you know, she's, you know, on the verge of tears there. So, you know, not only is Anakin gone and, you know, done horrible things, but at the same time, she's also lost her other love, which is the Republic. And so maybe it does make a little bit more sense, but it's just not explained, you know, very, very clearly, I suppose. But, so that's another thing to think about is she's, you know, her love, her life revolves around Anakin and their relationship, and then the Republic and keeping it a democracy and trying to restore peace. And everything that she's worked so hard for in both personally and professionally has just crumbled within probably 24, 36 hours. So maybe it does make a little bit more sense.
And if you step back
and think about it.
And if you look at the end of the Clone Wars, sorry, you know, she watches. Am I allowed to say anything like without ruining it?
Oh yeah, go ahead. I don't care.
I mean, she watches the, you know, Republic take Ahsoka to trial, and she watches how they just bully everyone and everything to get their way, and she watches what's going on with the Jedi Order. She's seeing it all, and she's helpless to do anything. I mean, she's not force sensitive. She knows that. There's nothing left for her. You know, once the Republic dies, what else does she have left? She has Anakin and their children. So she goes to try and save him, and then now he's gone too. You know, I mean, I guess in my eyes, she could have been strong enough to bring her children up, go into hiding, and teach them the way that things are supposed to be and help them to become Force users and do all that kind of stuff. But, I mean, you have to have something to live for. You know, and I mean, I guess that could have been her kids, but at the same time, then we wouldn't have the original trilogy, so I don't know. It's like...
That's true. We got to remember, there was a story already set in motion that we had to get to, and she wasn't in it, so...
yeah.
But, yeah.
Even just, you know, looking at it, again, in a more generalized way, you know, when you see the romance of Anakin and Padme, it's a very young romance, too, because it's so, and I like how you said earlier, just a few minutes ago there, Teresa, about how intense Anakin is. There's such an intensity to their romance. And I think that's true of younger people when they first, you know, when they have their first real romances, is it's so intense and it's so, you know, it's so necessary to your center of being, you know, like I am nothing without this. And I think that's typical for younger people. And we have to remember that Anakin and Padme are younger. And they both have very, you know, interesting lives. I mean, Anakin was a slave who's now a Jedi, and Padme's grown up in a royal palace and then was a queen and a senator. I mean, these are very sophisticated lives. And then there's this totally new thing, almost foreign to both of them, that just, you know, this feeling of romance that comes up between them. And they cling to it as their kind of end-all, be-all. And, you know, to look at that conversely, like in the OT, even just looking at, you know, even before, you know, Luke finds out Leia's his sister, he's obviously romantically attracted to her in episode 4 to some degree. I mean, when he first sees the hologram, you know, he's like, who is that? She's beautiful. Dude, it's your sister. Shut up. you know, even before he's aware of that, I mean, you know, the little love triangle that we have playing out really all the way up into Empire Strikes Back, to me, this is a more mature form of romance. I mean, neither Han nor Luke nor Leia, none of them are like clinging to this potential romance between them. They still know that there's something bigger going on. And I think the romantic stuff is a little bit lighter in the OT. I mean, especially if you look at, you know, the little exchanges between Han and Leia throughout Empire. I mean, it's kind of almost some of the more comical scenes in Empire Strikes Back. And, you know, this is this more mature adult feeling of romance where it's just fun, and it brings a richness to your life. It doesn't bring a necessity to your life. And I think, you know, that's ultimately the biggest difference between the romances we see in the PT and the OT is, you know, we see a much more adult and mature romance in the original trilogy where this is a romance. Like romance is supposed to be, it's fun and it's exciting. It opens you up into becoming a fuller person. Whereas this younger romance, it's much more clingy, really. You know, and again, like the simple way I put it is, it's kind of similar to what I said we did our episode about friendship. You know, I mean, in the PT we see dysfunctional friendship. You know, like the friendship between Anakin and Obi-Wan, and obviously this is the dysfunctional part of the story. Same with the romance. I mean, romance is something good, but it's a dysfunctional romance in the PT. Dysfunctional for many, many ways, many, many reasons. I mean, whereas it's much more healthy in the OT, and obviously this is the good part of the story. So, I don't know. Do you guys want to weigh in on any of that?
Yeah. So, in the original trilogy, of course, you know, the primary focus isn't going to be a romance aspect because they've already set the precedent that the main focus of the story is defeating the Empire. So that, you know, with anybody, I think when you're dealing with something that's that big, you know, your personal life sort of takes a back seat. And I think that's natural when, as opposed to the prequel trilogy, you don't really have anything specific going on already. Everything is developing at this point in time. So it's a little bit harder to kind of separate all that out, you know? And so their romance started before the Clone War started. And, you know, now they've already entered it. Now they've already said that they're in love with each other. But now the Clone Wars is getting ready to start. So it's trying to balance all of that. And if you think about it in the terms of years, I mean, they were only married for what, like 2 years probably? About that time?
I think it's three, I think.
Okay.
Still, very, very short amount of time.
Yeah, they're married for a very short amount of time. And, you know, I'm in my first year of marriage right now, and it's a very intense period of time. You know, so not only are they dealing with that first year of marriage thing, you know, however everybody says that the first year of marriage is your hardest year, you know, but go ahead and get married and have the hardest year of your life on top of fighting in a battle of clones to save the Republic, you know, and on top of that, throw in, you know, the complications of the Jedi Order and not supposed to be married or have attachments. You know, let's just, you know, make a big giant ball of crap and have to deal with it. You know what I mean? And in the original trilogy, we don't have the Jedi Order. That is the main thing that is a big deal here. The original trilogy, there's no Jedi Order. There is nobody controlling anybody. There's nobody saying, you can't do this, you can't do that. You know, they have freedom. And so they're not feeling like they are being forced to do anything except for go fight the Empire. But they're doing that because they need to, you know. So there's some really innate differences between the prequel trilogy and the original trilogy that shape those relationships.
Yeah. I agree. That's, and we also have to remember that in the original trilogy, while we do get the whole I love you, I know, they don't really get anywhere really past that point of admitting, hey, this could and probably should be something that we pursue, until, you know, basically they get, you know, get to that point, they say, you know, I love you, and then he's in Carbonite, and then they rescue him from Carbonite, and they have to go straight into that final confrontation with the Empire. And they don't really have any time to really try and make the relationship work because they're too busy with the other objective. And then finally, at the very end of that, they can go, okay, we've dealt with this. Now we can address this other thing, you know, this romantic, you know, thing. And I think this, the other big difference is a lot in the original trilogy, we get more flirting than anything else. It's not anything that ends up in a serious relationship on screen. I mean, we get, you know, the final, you know, some of the final shots of Return of the Jedi, you know, when, you know, Leia finally, you know, kisses him outright, kisses Han outright, you know, as the Death Star is blown up over Endor, and then, you know, they have the, you know, they share the embrace during the victory celebration with the Ewoks, but we don't really see anything advance past that until we get to the novels. We're just sort of left to go, okay, you know, we assume that they're going to take that farther.
And then proceed to be horrible parents.
Yeah, but, you know, I think, but even still, even in the OT, though, I mean, I think Han's decisions to stick around and become part of this rebellion is definitely because of the fact that he has this romantic feeling towards Leia. I mean, yes, it's also his friendship with Luke too. I think you can weigh it in equally. But I think there is.
I would say his initial decision was because of Luke, and then the romantic ideas sort of came later, I think.
I also think it had to do with the fact that he's selfish and he was trying to find a way to get away from Jabba the Hutt. I do think that's part of it. You got to think about Han's character. He's thinking about himself, you know, and while he may, you know, be like, Luke's cool, Luke's my friend and all this stuff, he's probably sitting there going, okay, if I join these guys, then the Hutts probably can't find me, and that's probably a good thing because I don't have any money.
Well, I don't know, because at the end of episode 4, he does have a lot of money. They give him a ton of money for helping out with Leia, and yet he doesn't immediately go to Jabba, which he could have done. He could have easily settled that. So that's a good point. I think Han is still a very selfish character up through Empire to some degree, but I think especially by Jedi, I mean, the fact that he sticks around, he volunteers to lead this, you know, the assault team on the forest moon of Endor. This level of commitment is definitely, I think, sparked by his feelings for Leia and Luke. I think you see the positivity though of romance here in the OT is that, you know, I mean, really, again, the only real romantic thing we get in the original trilogy is Han and Leia, but what that does to who Han is, I mean, we did an episode just a couple episodes ago about Han Solo's character. And, I mean, Han is humanized by his friendship with Luke and his love for Leia. And I think, you know, he takes on the things that are important to Leia. I mean, what he says to Leia in episode 4, you know, I ain't in this for you and I ain't in this for your revolution. I mean, he is purely selfish at that point. But by the end of Return of the Jedi, I mean, he risks his own life. I mean, he takes on what's of interest to his friend and his, you know, potential girlfriend here, whether or not it's of any importance to him. So, I mean, and I think that's true. I mean, you know, that's something that romance does. I mean, romance, it affects us. We start to invest ourselves into things we wouldn't normally have because of, to some degree, because they're important to the person we care about. I mean, just this weekend, I watched more March Madness than I have my whole life because my girlfriend's a bigger guy than I am. So, you know, I mean, but it's important to me because it's exciting to watch her get excited. So, you know, you invest yourself into things that the people you feel romantically about are invested in as well. And I think that's what Han's doing in the OT is he invests himself into this big cause. And like you both said, I mean, I think there's bigger issues going on than just their romance. And obviously it does take backseat. Like Han isn't like, what do you mean you can't go out tonight, Leia? I mean, I know you have like a meeting to organize this really big battle, but I really wanted to go see Star Trek V tonight. You know? So yeah, I mean, there's definitely that difference of, you know, there's a bigger issue going on, so their romance takes a back seat. But I think the romance kind of, it turns the wheels for some of these characters, most notably Han. So,
yeah, no, I agree. And I think you have a point, definitely, about doing things for the people that you care about. And it doesn't have to be just someone that you love. I mean, yeah. We do things for our friends just because our friends want to do it, even though we don't necessarily want to. I mean, I know I've gone, this has no bearing on anything really, but I know I've gone to many haunted houses with my friends at Halloween because that's what they want to do, not because I really want to go, because I don't, but that's what they want to do, so I go. You know, or the same thing, you know, my husband started playing Star Wars The Old Republic just because he wanted to, but also it would give him a way to start to enjoy Star Wars with me. And we had our first Star Wars conversation when he started playing the game, and he asked me what the planet Coruscant was and why it was so important.
Oh.
And,
Oh,
no.
And, you know, once I reminded him, you know, about the movies and the planets and stuff, and he was like, oh, okay. I mean, he knew what it was. He just didn't know the name, you know?
Yeah.
Right. And so, I mean, he's not a huge Star Wars guy. That's, you know, I'm the Star Wars guy. Or cool. but we do those things. And, you know, and I agree with you, the relationship between Han and Leia is a lot more mature and it's a lot more healthy, at least from what we see in the films. Now, if we go down the book route, this all changes.
Once they have kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we're sticking to the film. So, you know, yes, it is. You do see a lot more of a healthy, mature relationship. So.
If you want to go down the EU rabbit hole for a little bit, that's perfectly fine. You know, if you want to, you know, pull up some other points that you want to address, go ahead if you want to.
Well, that's the thing is that I can't really. There's stuff that I know, but and I've said this on Star Wars Bookworms. I am not the aficionado on anything that happens after Return of the Jedi because I have read very, very little. The majority of the EU that I have read is all Old Republic and prior to like the original trilogy. I've read all that stuff, which separates me and Aaron, who's my co-host, because he has read all of the stuff after Return of the Jedi. So, I mean, I know about Jaina and Jacen, and I know about all that stuff, and I've read some of it, but I don't know enough, you know, to know anything that would make me sound smart at all, so I'm just not going to say anything other than that I know that they're not great parents.
Yeah.
That I know for a fact. Other than that, don't really know a whole lot, and I kind of really want to read the new comic book series that has their, like, great-granddaughter or something.
The new Legacy?
The new Legacy comic.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, it's okay. It's been a while for me since I've done any post Return of the Jedi reading outside of the Thrawn trilogy. I just reread that recently. But so I'm a little forgetful as to what's going on in that time frame as well. So that's why we leave those types of discussions to our buddies over at Star Wars Beyond the Films. Yeah. They know what they're talking about.
True, they do. And the other thing about all that, too, is that it may not matter in come 2015. So
that's very true.
Right, right, right. Well, and sorry, I keep, like, pulling us back.
That's fine.
That's what I'm, that's what I'm good at. Pulling people back. Just kidding. But yeah,
another
think,
prequel. Another prequel, Carl. Yes. No, just
yes. I think, you know, again, because Star Wars is, I mean, Star Wars is popular in a nutshell because, you know, it's this grand sweeping, epic story. And as this epic story, there's just there's so much humanity in it. There's so many aspects of being human. You know, I mean, obviously friendship is a huge theme of Star Wars, you know, and even, and romance is obviously a theme of Star Wars. But I think romance is a much more subtle theme in Star Wars. I mean, I don't think any Star Wars film is a great romance film. Like, I wouldn't sit down and be like, oh, you want to check out a great romance flick? Watch Empire Strikes Back, or, you know, watch episode 2, Attack of the Clones. Like, you know, like, you know, Captain, being held by you isn't quite enough to get me excited. Sorry, sweetheart, haven't got time for anything else. It's my favorite
isn't that
line.
So romantic.
So good, yes. but it's.
What did you watch then? I'm curious.
Oh, what would I watch for romance?
Yeah.
Oh, let's see. Probably Casino Royale, James Bond. and honestly, this is awful. That's actually my favorite love story in any movie because it's so real. I love how James Bond's character is like, you know, he is James Bond until he falls in love, and you know, he's somebody who's so afraid of being vulnerable, but in the movie he learns to be vulnerable. So that's why I like it as a romance. Or 500 Days of Summer, that's a great romance because it's real.
You know what's funny about that? And I'm not gonna say the name out loud. I'm gonna let people figure it out. But my husband wants to name our daughter, if we have one, James Bond's weakness, primary love interest.
Oh, Vesper?
Don't say it!
Oh, sorry. Oh, whoops. Crap, you just said that too. I'm sorry. Ah.
Sorry, now everybody knows. Yeah, but that's what he wants to name her.
Such a beautiful name.
It is.
Oh, I'm going to steal that if I ever have a kid.
My mom doesn't like it.
Oh, come on,
she
Mom.
She thinks that it sounds like Vespa.
Oh, no, it's two different letters. It's only... Well, it would be Vespa in Boston. So... but,
anyway. Just don't ever visit Boston.
Yeah. Oh, this is our daughter, Vespa. Oh, hello, Vespa. No. You don't ride her around. but, yeah. Back on topic.
Meanwhile, back at the ranch.
Yeah. I think, you know, the Star Wars films do make a comment on romance, though, and comment that it's a very powerful force. I mean, we see that played out throughout, you know, the prequels, because essentially what leads to the downfall of Anakin is this confliction about romance. He doesn't know what to do with it because he's forbidden from it, but yet, like Teresa was saying, you know, it's such a natural part of being human. So, you know, he can't navigate those waters because, you know, again, going back to how we began the discussion, you know, when you prohibit something that's so natural to being human, what do you do? What do you do when these things come up? I mean, you can't always just suppress it. You know, it's something that's good and life-giving. And I think, you know, that's what we see in the OT is you know, again, it's not that – in no way would I say that Star Wars in any aspect is a romance film or even so in the OT. But we see how the positive effect, though, romance can have on people as well. It is a very powerful force. And it's powerful when you are capable of – knowing how to interact with it. I mean, Anakin and Padme really don't know what to do with it. Han and Leia, on the other hand, kind of do. I mean, it's the most powerful thing, I think, for human beings is to have romantic feelings. And, you know, it's you know, how do you deal with them? How do you make them part of your life? And Anakin and Padme aren't very good at that.
Right.
because they're so obsessed with themselves. Like, they're so obsessed with just holding on to it rather than just letting it be. I mean, Han and Leia's romance is much more natural, whereas Anakin and Padme's is much more boxed in, if you will.
Right. So. I think there's a few other relationships that we can actually talk about. We can talk about Obi-Wan and, oh my gosh.
Satine?
Thank you.
Yes.
it was just, I did not have it. We can even talk about Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru.
Oh, best romance ever.
Yeah, I mean, but you're looking, if we talk about that one first, you're looking at a successful one. One that they were together before Anakin came around. They took Anakin in as their own child, helped raise him, and then you see them, you know, once we get to A New Hope, where it works. You know, now there's a little bit, if you ask me, it seems like, you know, Owen's a little bit bitter and kind of very controlling. I don't know if you guys see that, but...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got that typical, you know...
The controlling, though, I think is more directed towards Luke than anything else, you know, because he wants to make sure Luke doesn't, you know, go off and become his father, essentially. But I do see, you know, definitely he's become a very bitter individual. But I do agree, though, that it's one that has worked and one that obviously, you know, even in A New Hope, they still care for each other because, you know, they have the end of the little conversation after Luke runs off and leaves the dinner table right before he goes and stares at the sun's setting, you know. The way that Beru, you know, turns to Owen and, you know, says, you know, well, it means so much to him, you know, all of his friends have gone, and she just sits there with her hands, you know, sort of clasped under her chin, and she just sort of looks at him, you know, at Owen, like, you know, come on, really? We've had this conversation before. You know it's the right thing. And there's so much communication that's going on between them that's not said. You know, and he gives this little sheepish, you know, ducking of his head, you know, through the rest of his dialogue there. But it's very quick and very subtle, I think. But it does still, they do seem to still care about each other, even if Owen has become a very grizzled and bristly human being in general. So,
Well, right. I mean, it's a very quick, you know, look into a relationship, but it kind of gives you maybe some sort of a understanding of maybe how Luke is the way that he is, because he's not all crazy and, you know, doesn't understand things. You know, and then maybe that's because he was brought up in a family. He was, you know, how old is he in A New Hope?
I want to say about 20.
Early 20s.
Yeah, 1920.
Yeah, about the same age as Anakin is when Anakin's going through all of this turmoil. You know, but Luke hasn't encountered all of that. You know, he's been in a very stable environment. You know, he's learned a lot of just traditional stuff that you would learn as a kid. And he was brought up very well by two parents, you know, that were in love with each other and that, you know... It's just all that basic stuff. And Anakin didn't have that. So it's kind of... Maybe in a way it kind of shows why the characters are the way they are.
That's very true. That's very true. Because if Anakin didn't have that sort of upbringing, he wouldn't be, you know, this... He wouldn't have this very pure, bordering on naive outlook on life. He's very innocent and very pure in motivations and thought processes, very sincere, which makes him, you know, makes for such, you know, awesome interplay when he runs across Han Solo, who's, you know, the galaxy's cynic. But I do agree that, you know, having that nurturing, loving, stable environment to grow up in, most definitely influenced the way that, that Luke behaves and Luke acts, which is interesting because he turns out to be one of the greatest Jedi ever, but the Jedi don't do any of that. I'm just made a connection here, is that, you know, they don't go and they don't have this nurturing, you know, I'm sure they care for and, you know, are compassionate towards their younglings, but they don't have the nurturing, the, you know, those types of things that parents just do for their kids, which I think, you know, sort of sets the Jedi up, you know, as, you know, doomed to fail in any sort of relationship if they do stray outside the Jedi guidelines. So,
well, and maybe that's why the new Jedi Order tends to be more of a successful reincarnation of the Jedi. You know, because they don't, he doesn't make it that way to where they don't, you know, have relationships and don't have kids and all that stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's that nurturing and that caring aspect, you know, of family. You know, whereas the Jedi Order is very much, in the Old Republic, seems to be very much more of I don't want to say cult, but a monastery type of environment, where they're all colleagues, not family. Mm-hmm. You know, even though I'm sure they sometimes refer to each other as, you know, family or something like that, but they're very much more colleagues than anything else. Whereas I think, from what I've read, the New Republic Jedi Order is much more of a family, which I think makes them a much stronger unit than their Old Republic counterparts were. So,
true.
Yeah.
But did you have anything you wanted to say, Carl, on Owen and Beru?
No, not really. I mean, I don't. Yeah, I mean, I think that's obviously a very side romance, but, you know, like you both brought up, though, I mean, it's stable, though, and they give Luke a stable upbringing. I mean, that's one of the huge differences between Anakin and Luke is, you know, the way they both respond to tragedy in their lives is very differently. Anakin grasps to control it, whereas Luke is much more open and trusting. I think they kind of learned that from how they were brought up and you know, I mean, Luke grew up in a household where he was with two people that were in love. And, you know, I'm sure Owen and Beru were never, like, you know, dancing by candlelight too often. Or, you know, Beru came home to Owen laying flower petals on the floor, you know, to the blue milk bath. You know, and I mean, and also part of that, even Owen's a hard man because he lives in a harsh culture, a harsh climate. You know, I mean, to some degree, like, you know, we easily can look at, you know, Uncle Owen and be like, oh, he's so mean and he's so gruff. But it's like, yeah, but dude's like working his butt off every day just to survive. So, of course, there's going to be a certain like harshness to him. But, you know, obviously he's very faithful and passionate towards, not passionate, maybe we don't see that, but he is definitely very, you know, he's very in love with his wife. You know, I mean, for Luke to be able to see that, I think Luke sees the goodness in romance, you know, as an adolescent and as a young man, that when he does go on to reform the Jedi Order and maybe he become aware of, you know, some of the issues the old Jedi Order had by restricting this very natural human tendency, he's able to look back and say, well, like, look, I grew up in a household where romance worked, where romance, you know, it raised me well and provided for me, you know, and this is an integral part of being a human being. And, you know, obviously not for aliens, but, you know, it's an integral part of being a person. You know, I mean, this is an integral part to being a full person. And Luke's going to say, all right, well, you know, I know what it's like to feel romantic for somebody. And, you know, that's something that's good. We should celebrate that. And, you know, I think that's why he does restructure the Jedi Order. Just to back up a little bit, I think I do get the restriction for romance in the old Jedi Order, in the old Republic. You know, I mean, obviously what they're trying to prevent is kind of what happens with Anakin is they're afraid of, you know, a Jedi becoming too attached to somebody that they give up their duties, you know, and you know, that they become divided by their attention. And I think that's the fear of the old Jedi Order. So, you know, you can see to some degree why they want to curb that, but by totally eradicating it, it's like an all or nothing thing. And that's not a fair way or an intelligent way of going about it. It can't be always all or nothing. Don't restrict what's natural.
So. Yeah, but at the same time, I mean, if the Jedi themselves are operating out of fear, that's something that they're doing, you know, out of fear, then, I mean, where does that leave you with fear leads to anger, anger leads to hate, blah, 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 blah. You know what I mean? I mean, they can't operate out of fear. But the thing is that's one of the things that we see is throughout the fall of the Jedi Order is everything they're doing is out of fear. You know, they don't want to, you know, step too far out of line here or there. And so they start boxing themselves in. So they sort of set up their own doom, if you look at it, with everything that happens from, you know, the development of the Jedi, and I'm sure they have all tons and thousands of years of good years and everything's fine. And then you get to the prequel trilogy, and then people who have studied them enough have started pushing on the blocks, you know, kind of like a Jenga tower. Well, I push this one and that one, and then, I mean, they fall because they're so clouded by fear that they completely take themselves down, you know. Yeah. When if they would have just stepped up and manned up, you know, and gotten over themselves just a little bit, you know, I don't know. It's just, it's complicated.
It is. The Jedi Order is a very complicated animal, and they are as responsible for their downfall as Palpatine was. They got themselves to a point where all Palpatine had to do was push a few buttons and pull a few strings, and they just fell apart on their own. Mm-hmm. So, it's, you know, I'm going to sort of change tracks here just slightly. It's very interesting when we get to Obi-Wan, who is a Jedi, who is brought up in this system, who ends up, you know, having a very, it's a very complicated relationship with Satine, because, you know, obviously in one of the first episodes, you know, in that we see Obi-Wan and Satine, and he tells her straight up, at that point, if you had asked, I would have left the Jedi Order for you. You know, obviously he and Satine had this relationship where it was very strong and very important to him and to her, but they both decided that they had greater responsibilities as, you know, Duchess and Jedi, that they put that relationship on hold and just let it sit there. So my sort of awkward transition into Obi-Wan and Satine. So,
that's a very mature thing to do. You know, it goes back to the Han and Leia thing, you know, duty first, because they know that the things that they're dealing with are so much bigger than themselves. And so they put it, you know, they put what their jobs are first.
Yeah. And I find it interesting that, you know, Obi-Wan tells Satine that if she had asked, he would have left the order for her. He wouldn't have voluntarily left the order, but if she had asked, he would have done that. But she loved him so much that she didn't want to take the Jedi from him, so she didn't ask. You know, so I find that a very interesting, a very unique sort of relationship and love. And, you know, obviously it gets rekindled, you know, somewhat here in, you know, the Clone Wars that we've seen. But I just find it very interesting that we get Obi-Wan, you know, who ends up with a very healthy, a very selfless sort of romance. And Anakin doesn't take advantage of any of that, you know, when he's going through his own issues with Padme. So I just find that very, very interesting. Yeah. So.
Well, I think the main thing is we don't know a whole lot about Obi-Wan. All we know that we've been allowed to know is what we see in the prequel trilogy and the original trilogy, because all of that has been off limits, which is why I'm so pumped about there being an Obi-Wan Kenobi movie if it comes out. You know, and then the Kenobi book that's coming out, just because he's kind of an anomaly. You know, we only know this and that. So we know what happens in the Clone Wars. We know that he has this relationship with Satine. We know that he would have left the Jedi Order to be with her. But how did he get to the point that he was a part of the Jedi Order? We don't know. What has happened in his life that would get him to the point of being able to know the difference between choosing to leave and being asked to leave and caring that much about someone? We don't know. Because we don't have all of that information, so it makes it really hard to even begin to analyze that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's true.
Yeah, like you said, Jason. I mean, I think it's really cool though to see how, you know, he says, you know, I would have left for you, and like you just brought up though. I mean, she never asks him to though, because she knows what's best for Anakin, and in a certain degree,
Obi-Wan.
What did I say, Anakin?
Anakin.
Gee whiz. I'm just thinking about Hayden Christensen. I just got all riled up. anywho, back to that. Yeah.
Thank you, Ewan McGregor.
Whatever. yeah, I think even to some degree, there is a romance there, though, between the two of them. And it is a very mature romance. I think they're capable of, to some degree, they are in love with each other, but they realize that love can't be exclusive to one another. They can't create this exclusive relationship together because of the bigger issues for both of them. I think Obi-Wan is very honest. And I remember being when all that stuff came up with Satine during the Clone Wars, I didn't know if I liked it at first because, like, I don't know. Like, that doesn't seem like that. To me, it left a sour taste in my mouth about Obi-Wan. Just because it's like, no, Obi-Wan, like, that's not Obi-Wan. He's not Anakin. But then I liked it more, actually, than I really thought about it. I'm like, no, that really humanizes Obi-Wan. And I think that's why Obi-Wan somewhat reacts the way he does to Anakin and Padme's relationship. I mean, he's well aware of probably what's going on with them. And I think to a certain degree, he understands it. He doesn't really want to have to bring it up, and he doesn't. But he understands what it's like to be committed to something yet also feel strongly for somebody else. But I think Obi-Wan, again, Obi-Wan is such a model character throughout Star Wars for so many reasons. And even here, too, I mean, they're modeling for us, you know, that sometimes no matter how strongly you feel about somebody romantically, sometimes the timing's just not right. Sometimes it can't happen right there, that way. It's... Obi-Wan has strong feelings for Satine. She has strong feelings for Obi-Wan, but it just can't work. You know, to some degree, it just can't work without creating a huge mess. And they're mature enough to realize that. I think that's something that's really cool about them too, is that they're both very committed to something else. So.
Well, I mean, and the one thing I like about their relationship, actually, that I really like that the Clone Wars did, is that they built the story in a way that Kenobi would be there when Satine died. So that way she could express her, you know, everlasting eternal love for him. And you get to see the relationship come to an end. And you get to see the look on Obi-Wan's face. And you get to see him at least get some sort of closure for that part of his life. And it was actually really sad for me to see that relationship die for him, because I mean, he handled it brilliantly, but I'm just saying, you know, I could see that completely crushing him, but he didn't let it crush him. So it shows another sign of maturity and of what Obi-Wan really stands for in this series, you know. Mm-hmm. Is he just seems to understand so much more, and some things that are beyond him, and he understands the ways that life can occur and how to deal with it. so much better than Anakin does. And so part of me really wants to know, like I said before, about his upbringing, because there's got to be something in his upbringing that brings him to that, for him to be able to have those qualities.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although I think Obi-Wan was a Jedi from a very young age, based on the little bit of backstory I've heard, is he was always a Jedi. I think it's just a testament to his character, just the way he develops himself as a person.
And that could be the difference too. I mean, if he was in the Jedi Order since he was a baby, you know, and he had gotten scooped up because of his connection with the Force, then he grew up in that frame of life, his whole entire being, as opposed to Anakin.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But even so, he, you know, even if he was, you know, raised completely in the Jedi Temple, he's had to have something different about him, and it could be because of Qui-Gon. But Obi-Wan handles relationships much differently than anyone else in the Jedi Order. He seems much more compassionate towards, you know, people and, you know, things outside of the Jedi than almost anybody else, and to some extent maybe even Yoda.
Definitely Mace Windu.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh my god, I can't stand, I hate Mace Windu now after like the last episode of the Clone Wars. Cannot stand him at all.
Never.
And it makes
him.
Me mad.
Carl, your hatred of Mace Windu is completely validated in the final episode of the Clone Wars. Go watch it tonight when we're done here.
Okay. I've never liked him. He's such a punk. He has no compassion.
But Obi-Wan, you know, let himself get to a point where he even considered leaving the Order because of a relationship with someone else. Whereas most Jedi would have, you know, been very, you know, must not form attachments and, you know, gone and meditated, you know, and turned inwardly. So there has to be some sort of something that was different with Obi-Wan than most of the other Jedi. And like I said, maybe that was Qui-Gon, because Qui-Gon is very in tune with the living Force, and, you know, he keeps on picking up these, you know, pathetic life forms, as Obi-Wan would call them, you know, Jar Jar and Anakin, and, you know, Qui-Gon is very, very much led by, you know, the here and now and what the Force dictates then, and, you know, the little people along the way. And, you know, perhaps, you know, that could be the difference for Obi-Wan, but we don't know. And that's something that would be really interesting to explore, is the beginning of that relationship with Obi-Wan and Satine. And maybe we'll get some backstory on that in the new Kenobi novel. So that would be really interesting to find out. So
definitely. Yeah, definitely. And I'm just going to say, since we just talked about Qui-Gon, I love Qui-Gon and he's awesome. And so I would not be surprised if Obi-Wan is the way he is because of Qui-Gon Jinn.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I
know. And who knows? Maybe Qui-Gon had a brush with romance, you know, in his early life, too, you know. I would not put that past him at all.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, no, me neither.
Especially the way that he, you know, interacts with Shmi. You know, it's a very tender relationship. It's not like, you know, love and romance, but it's a very tender, you know, compassionate, mutual sort of a relationship there, which was very, very well done by both Liam Neeson and Pernella August, which I really, really enjoyed. Now that I'm older and I can, you know, catch those things. But
well, I mean, he understood the dynamic between a parent and their child. I mean, that's precisely where it came from. You know, he understood that dynamic, so there's going to have to be something in his background to where he would be able to understand what that means, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's another something for the EU to pick up, or maybe or something, you know, backstory somewhere, folks. There's so much that you can do with these characters. You don't have to go all about Luke and Han and Leia.
Save the Clone Wars!
Save the Clone Wars, yes. Oh, man. That's awesome. Well, this has been awesome. Do we have any other thoughts that we want to, you know, address here? Or are we kind of wrapping up? So,
I think we can wrap it up. You know, I just think, you know, romance is pretty great. And, you know, if my girlfriend was here, she would probably say nothing because she's not emotional like me. But, yes.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. What does romance really mean? You know, and you guys have said it a couple of times. You know, romance is there to, you know, supplement us in our life and to add to us as people. But the thing is that romance is different to everyone. You know, and what it means to people is different from person to person, even within a relationship, you know, to someone that you're married to. You know, romance is it can be different. And the thing is what is romance? What is love? What is, you know, a relationship? Those are all different things, because a lot of people can argue that romance is the stuff that you do, you know, the whole petals and candles and teddy bears and all that stuff, you know, and then what is love? And it's so complicated that it makes it really hard to, you know, to understand it. But I think that just talking about romance in and of itself, I think romance is something that is essential to everyone. Love is essential to everyone. I'm going to step away from romance. Love is essential to everyone's being, whether you find love with another person or whether you understand love through your family or through your friends. If you have some sort of love in your life, you're bound to be a better person, and being able to understand how to be compassionate towards other people, how to be empathetic, how to feel what other people are feeling, and being able to relate to others. Love gives you the ability to be kind to other people and to embrace others. Without love, you miss all of that. And it doesn't have to be a romantic love.
Yeah, no, yeah, I completely agree, and I do think that overall our discussion addressed more love than romance. I do agree, but it is a very essential thing, a very human thing. You know, even if you are an alien, Carl. It's something that it's very essential and it's something that if you do not have love, you know, either something to love or something or someone to love you, then that does, you know, there's something missing in you as a person. And, you know, it's something that we all crave and something that we all need. But the thing is that we always have to remember is that it has to be appropriate for whatever your situation is. And, you know, obviously we see many, many examples, you know, not overtly, in Star Wars, but, you know, where, you know, some people like Anakin and Padme maybe had a less appropriate to their situation, you know, take on love. And whereas maybe, Han and Leia, just to use our big two examples here, you know, had a more appropriate, you know, way, you know, form of love for them. So, you know, not only is it an essential thing, but you also have to be smart with it and not let it control you. So, you know, which we've seen, you know, as evidenced by Anakin letting that love, you know, drive him to a very a desperate obsession and ultimately lead to his downfall. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think romance is simply, it's a specific type of love. Well, at least it can lead to a specific type of love, because romance doesn't always imply love. Yeah, I mean, I think romance meets its goal when it meets love, because I think romance is the exciting part that opens you up towards love. And yeah, you know, I think we see the effect of that throughout Star Wars is. How does it open these characters up, and does it open these characters up in an appropriate way? And it's something so natural, and I don't know what else to say, but it's
go out and love someone, peace and love.
Exactly.
There we go.
All you need is love.
Yeah.
Yes.
All you need is love. All you need is love. Love is all you need. Thank you, Facebook memes, for bringing that one to my attention. but anyways, I think maybe that kind of wraps up that discussion there. This has been really fun. I had a really intellectually stimulating time here tonight, folks. So
yes, absolutely. And before we wrap up, we want to introduce our next matchup, which is going to be a little bit different than what we've done before. This is in no way lightsaber. This is in no way ship to ship or blaster to blaster. This is a military tactician matchup, if you will. So the matchup is between Grand Admiral Thrawn and Grand Moff Tarkin. Ooh. So at the height of their careers, who do you think, tactically, because again, we're not talking like hand-to-hand here. They're not hand-to-hand combatants. But as military commanders, who do you think has the edge if they each had, you know, a legion of troops at their disposal? And
a fleet.
Or a fleet, right, exactly. Fleet. Sorry. Yes, a fleet at their disposal. Who is more tactically intelligent, Grand Moff Tarkin or Grand Admiral Thrawn? So be sure to weigh in on that.
Yes.
You should give them a planet that they're fighting over.
Oh. Ooh. Well, how about a woman?
Oh, goodness. Planet makes a lot more sense.
Yes. I don't think Grand Admiral Thrawn is too into women.
If you're gonna have people think about it in the form of tactics, you might want to... They need something to think of what the tactics would be.
Well, that's true. I would just say Coruscant.
Yeah, Coruscant.
Okay.
Because then once they take that, then they can easily, you know, start controlling other things, other planets and stuff. So since it's the central of the galaxy, we'll say Grand Admiral Thrawn versus Grand Moff Tarkin in a tactical battle for the planet Coruscant. So I like that.
Excellent.
It's awesome, and we gotta wrap things up here. So
yes, we can't wrap things up before Teresa gets a chance to tell everybody how they can follow her and all the fun, exciting things she's constantly doing. So, Teresa, I hand you the floor. How can people get in touch with you or learn more about all the awesome, fun things you're doing?
And is there anything special that you want to plug, or you know, this is your time?
Well, you can find me on Twitter at @IceColdPenguin. And yes, there is a story about that. If you want to ask me about that on Twitter, I will tell you. My website and blog that I run is Fangirl Next Door. We try to get a couple of articles out a week, me and my co-writer. But my other stuff, I write for the Star Wars Report, and I write for Jedi News UK. Also, I guess my big plug is the new podcast that I'm doing with a fellow co-writer at the Star Wars Report is Star Wars Bookworms. We just released our second episode on Saturday, and we're waiting for the big push for Monday. But if you are a Star Wars The Old Republic player, you want to listen to episode 2. It's coming out in 2 parts. The first part is already out, and that is the part that anybody who loves The Old Republic needs to listen to, that because of the interview that we have. And I'm going to leave you hanging with that. You want to hear it because of the interview.
She just Empire Strikes Backed us.
Yes, I did. And I also do some stuff related to Disney as well, and you can find that through my Twitter, which is at @IceColdPenguin, as I said before. And Fangirl Next Door does have a Facebook page, so you can go over there. We only have like 60 likes, so you should go like us.
Yes. That's a shame. That needs to be rectified.
I don't talk about it very much. That's probably why.
Well, here we go, folks. Teresa is awesome. So go follow her and keep an eye on all her awesome stuff. So very insightful on the things of Star Wars. So
You won't get much news out of me. You'll get more. I wonder why this is.
Yes, ponderings and commentary. So, exciting things.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me on, guys. I'm glad I got to be your first female guest. That's awesome.
Yes, we are too, because you are awesome. So,
yes, indeed. we were very, very excited when we decided to do this, and we're like, who should we get to talk about this topic? Oh, Teresa. You know, it was not a very long thought process of who we should get.
Again, so Cranky came into our head for all of 3 seconds. So
just kidding. I appreciate it. I appreciate it so much. It was a blast and I had so much fun.
Well, good. We did too. It was a blast from the Death Star, you know what I'm saying?
Well, Carl, with that,
yeah.
How can people get in contact with us if they want to, you know, do anything, you know, respond to our matchup or just talk with us about things?
Well, the first thing they could do is destroy a planet so as to send a tremor in the Force. No, I'm kidding. Oh, that's so violent. I'm sorry. No, don't do that. Go give a hug. Go show some love. But yes, of course.
Just do an Ewok village. You know.
Ewok villages. They're so adorable. But yes, you can, of course, reach us on Facebook, facebook.com/WampasLairPodcast. You can follow us on Twitter at WampasLair, and you can always email us at WampasLairPodcast@gmail.com. And of course, if you have yet to do so, we would love it if you could rate us in the iTunes store, maybe write us a quick review. And also, you know, in any of those formats, Twitter, Facebook, email, whatever, if you have any ideas for something you'd like us to do as a show topic, anything like that, Jason and I are getting really excited for our 50th episode coming up. We're still brainstorming what to do, how we can hopefully blow each other's minds and yours at the same time. So, you know, give us any ideas you have or if there's any matchups you want us to put up there. Let us know, because we love to hear from the Larians.
Indeed. Indeed. And, well, with that, folks, that about wraps up this show. This has been episode number 48 of the Wampa's Lair podcast, Across the Stars. Thank you once again, Teresa, for coming on. My name is Jason for Carl and Teresa. We will see you next time in the Wampa's Lair.